Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by Literati. Go to literati.com/creative for 25% off your first two orders and pick your kid's book club gift today. This episode is also sponsored by Patreon. Find the creative freedom to do your best work and the financial stability to make it possible. Visit patreon.com and start creating on your own terms. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of the brand new book, The Motivation Code, available now wherever books are sold. Figure out what drives you. Go to motivationcode.com to learn more. So we have more tools at our disposal for time management than at any point in human history. I mean, we are great at managing our time. We can stack meeting after meeting after meeting, especially now because they're all virtual. There's literally no transaction cost to switching from one meeting to the next. We don't have to go from one place to the other. We can be on a meeting until 9:59 and then at 10 o'clock, boom, we're somewhere else meeting with someone from across the country. We have the ability to manage our time very efficiently, but are we doing the right things? Are we managing our time effectively? Are we investing our time in ways that are going to lead to increased productivity and especially increased creativity? Well, today's guest is David Cadavy. David is the author of a new book called Mind Management, Not Time Management. And he's going to walk us through some of the principles behind managing our mind for better creative insight and better creative follow through as well. We're going to talk with David about the core principles of mind management, as well as the phases of creativity and how we move through them as we produce our best work. Before we jump into that, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Literati. So listen, for kids, it's never easy to find the right gift. We're always slyly listening for clues as to what they want. But this entire crazy year, your little ones have been practically yelling what they want. They want adventure, laughter, camaraderie, normalcy. That's why they need Literati Kids. So Literati Kids is a subscription book club that sends five beautiful children's books to your door each month, handpicked by experts. Literati Kids has book clubs for children ages 0 to 12, and each club has age-appropriate selections tailored to what your child needs. It's tough sorting through the millions of kids' books released every year, trying to find rich, engaging stories for your child. Well, Literati Kids takes care of that. Every month, you'll get a box of five expertly chosen kids' books with themes like mystery, adventure, STEM, and history. These are soul-enriching books handpicked by leaders in child education. In addition to these incredible books, your child will receive artwork from world-renowned artists, personalized stickers, and other fun goodies in each monthly box. You won't get this kind of expert curation anywhere else. Gift subscriptions are also available for 1, 3, 6, or 12 months of books, and it's a great way to keep the holiday magic going through 2021, whether you're gifting a niece, a grandson, a friend's child, or your own child. So go to literati.com/creative for 25% off your first two orders and pick your kid's book club gift today. Remember, no one else has book clubs like these. Only at literati.com/creative can you get 25% off your first two orders and receive five incredible kids books curated by experts delivered to your door every month. Again, that's literati.com/creative. Make your little one's holiday season unforgettable this year. We thank Literati for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have back on the show today, David Cadavy. David is the author of The Heart to Start, and he's the author of the brand new book. It's called Mind Management, Not Time Management. David, welcome back to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Todd, it is an honor to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
So I think it's been maybe a couple of years since the last time we spoke. I think we ran into each other at an event a couple of years ago, and I'm always fascinated by your work and what you're up to. For those who may be experiencing the world of David Cadavy for the first time, could you just explain a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I can say that the way that I got to where I'm currently at right now started with a book deal that I got 10 years ago. And I didn't think of myself as a writer. And I realized that nothing that I had learned about productivity as a productivity enthusiast for years had prepared me for the challenge of actually sitting down and writing a book. So I did manage to suffer my way through writing that first book. Design for Hackers did well. That worked out fine. But when the smoke cleared on that process, I was really asking myself, why was that so difficult? Why did it take me 12 hours a day of banging my head against the wall to suddenly have these little 15-minute windows where suddenly all the writing came easily? And so that brought me on this sort of quest for the last 10 years, basically, of trying to figure out how to arrive at that moment where you have those creative insights coming. So I dug into the neuroscience, the behavioral science. I moved to Colombia to completely redesign my life around creative output. I worked with a behavioral scientist and sold a productivity app to Google, was an advisor to that company, and have really been asking myself this question for a long time, and finally got it into this cohesive framework that is in this book, Mind Management, Not Time Management. And I'm personally using it myself and finding it very easy now to get into that creative flow, to have those moments of insight, to be productive during those times when creativity is actually what matters.
All right, well, let's talk about that distinction between mind management and time management. I think some people might say, well, you're kind of splitting hairs there. Aren't they kind of really the same thing? But you argue in the book that they're not. What is the difference between mind management and time management?
Well, there have been some nice advances in time management where people are talking about taking care of priorities or eliminating unnecessary things. But if you really go back to the origins of time management, you would be going back to the origins of scientific management, when Frederick Taylor, this industrial engineer, was standing next to a worker in the Bethlehem Steel, the Bethlehem Steel Yard, and with a stopwatch, and instructing this worker, pick up this chunk of iron this way, pick up this chunk of iron and move over here and bend in this way and grab it in this way, and actually breaking down these steps that this worker should use to pick up a chunk of iron and timing it all. And then what he did was he just filled the available time with the most efficient movement possible. So he was almost like he was programming computers, programming these industrial workers to do these movements. And that's like the origin of time management. And a lot of us think of things in that way now, in that we treat time as if it's a commodity, as if it is bushels of corn or blocks of frozen orange juice concentrate. And we try to look at the open slots on our calendar and fill those with production, with, another way we're thinking of things is input output. But now more and more, creativity is the thing that matters in being productive. And it doesn't necessarily take time to have a fantastic idea. We're living in this high leverage world where you can spend just a moment doing something and can have a tremendous impact. Or you can spend a lot of time doing something and it can be a complete failure. And so input and output have been decoupled from each other. And so it's more about getting us in this state of mind where we can have these fantastic high impact ideas. And so, yeah, you need time management at like a base level, but eventually you reach the point of diminishing returns on that, where the more that you are living by the clock, the more anxious you get, and anxiety, feeling being in a harried pace, that is counter to us having good ideas. That kills creativity. And so we need to be able to manage our energy in a way that allows us to have these great insights and then, yes, eventually to execute on them and bring them out into the world.
Yeah, that's something that I often talk to people and companies and leaders about, as well as this idea of diminishing returns, that, we can stack meeting after meeting after meeting after obligation, and we get to the end of that, we've got nothing left to give, right? And so we think we're being, we think that we're maximizing our productivity, but really what we're doing is maximizing our efficiency. We're not maximizing our effectiveness. And those are distinct things. I mean, we can be very efficient at doing ineffective things, right? Or we could be very effective sometimes at doing very inefficient things. And there's some curve, there's a meeting of the curves that we have to find. And I think that's kind of what you're exploring in this book, is that sort of intersection between, yeah, we have to use our time wisely, but really it's more about what we're doing with our time when we spend it.
Yeah, because when you are using your time in a way that makes you creative or that helps you have better ideas and be more innovative, it doesn't feel like you're being productive. I think, you know, you've written this before, I think in Herding Tigers, that great leaders have great rituals. Like, it doesn't feel productive to go to the coffee shop and sit down and get a drink that you like and open up your notebook and just sort of freeform write in there about some management issue. It doesn't feel like you're being efficient. In fact, there was a study done at Harvard University where they found that the more time pressure that time pressure, layman would just be, being busy. The more time pressure employees felt, they started doing less and less of these activities that would lead to creative ideas, things like brainstorming. And they found that actually kind of compounded, in that it wasn't just the day that they felt busy that they were less creative. They were less creative the day after that, and the day after that. And it really indicated that over time, if you have this bad habit of trying to fill all of your time with actually input to output, not making the space for these sort of seeds of creativity, that can over time just continue to decrease your creativity. It's almost like putting your creativity, you're going into creative debt. When you don't have money and you take on debt, you have to pay interest on that debt. It's the same way with time.
Yeah, totally true. And one thing that you point out in the book as well is that, we also tend to think that all hours are kind of the same. If I'm doing something at 6 a.m, it's the same as if I'm doing it at 6 p.m, it's the same as if I'm doing it at 11 p.m. at night. But you argue that not all hours are actually equal. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is something that I found when I was working with the behavioral scientist Dan Ariely on an app called Timeful that eventually got sold to Google. We realized that because we were making an app that basically had machine learning in it, and it would look at your schedule and it would make suggestions of times to do certain things. And we realized that we needed to consider patterns in schedule. Like, we knew better than to, okay, you want to go jogging, we're gonna schedule it at 3 a.m. We know you're sleeping then. But depending upon how high of a priority one thing or another thing is, you can find that there might be this 2-hour block of time. I know it's this way for me with creative work. I think it might be the same way for you from what I've heard, where if you miss that early morning writing session, you didn't just miss, half an hour of that writing session or an hour of that writing session. You can make it up later in the day. You just missed it for the whole day.
Yeah.
And when you really get locked in to where you find these sweet spots where you can be far more productive in a certain type of thinking than you can any other time, you start to develop those and find those patterns within your week. So for me, for example, a Monday morning, that is the prime time. I've recovered over the weekends. I've lost any of the sort of bad ideas that were floating around in my brain. I've got a fresh, clean slate. That Monday morning creative session or whatever it is that I'm doing with that Monday morning energy, that's incredibly valuable energy right there.
Yeah.
And you start to find that you have these pockets of time where you can be many times more productive than you can be at some other time if you were trying to do the same thing.
Oh, for sure. And the thing is, that's very different about that concept, is that it's not, you know, a lot of people are just looking for the formula. Well, just tell me the formula. What's the formula for me, you know, to be more creative or more productive, more effective? But it doesn't work that way. It's actually probably going to be fairly unique to each person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually to tie it in with your productivity profiles, you know, you've got these activities of mapping or making or meshing. And right, we all tend to avoid one of these. And so then because of that, we're a driver or we're a dreamer or we're a drifter. I tend to be a drifter, so I have trouble with the mapping part. I'm making stuff. I am meshing things. I'm following my curiosity.
Yeah.
But when it comes to mapping it, sometimes I struggle with that. And so that's why, as I say, those Monday mornings are a time when I have a lot of energy, and all day Monday. That's why if I'm going to, I'll carve out time for mapping during that time, because why do we avoid the things that we avoid? Sometimes it's because we're putting it off. And when we finally do feel like we're going to try this thing, well, we just don't have the energy for it.
Yeah.
And so if we take a bookmark on that very best energy that we have and say, you know, that's the time that I'm going to carve out to get into that energy to do that thing that I tend to avoid.
Hey everyone, we're going to get back to my interview with David in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Patreon. So as a creator, it can feel like you're making stuff for practically everyone but yourself. Patreon is a creator-founded membership platform where you can build a reliable income stream to fuel your creative independence. No advertisers, no algorithms, no mainstream gatekeepers holding your paycheck or telling you what to do. On Patreon, the people who love what you make can directly support it with paid subscriptions. In return, they'll get access to exclusive content and custom rewards. Find the creative freedom to do your best work and the financial stability to make it possible. If you're an illustrator, a video creator, a podcaster, an artist, or a creative person of any kind, sign up today at patreon.com. That's patreon.com and start creating on your own terms. And now back to the interview with David Cataby. So in the book, you talk about the four stages of creativity, and a story that you tell is a story. I love this story, actually, and I've heard this story told many times because I've had the same experience. And it's funny, this might be the one time in my life I can say that I have something in common with Paul McCartney. but you talk about how Paul McCartney wrote the song Yesterday. Could you use that story, share it, and talk a little about the stages of creativity?
Yeah, this is a story I had heard a number of times, and it actually always kind of made me feel kind of bad because the way it's told is Paul McCartney is sleeping and he just has this melody that comes to his mind, and he's sort of in this twilight where you're just waking up and there's a piano right next to his bed. And so he just stumbles out of bed and says, what are those chords? And he starts playing them. And he says, wow, this is really good. And it turns out it's Yesterday. You know, the one of the most covered songs ever, one of the most successful pop songs ever. You hear that story, wow, he just composed it in a dream. And when you hear that, I mean, I guess it has a little bit of appeal to it because it sounds like, you know, the way you might fantasize about winning the lottery.
Right.
Like, oh, maybe I'll just, like, in my sleep, I'll just dream, you know, one of the greatest songs ever.
But you're not Paul McCartney.
But I'm not Paul McCartney. Right. And I dream songs sometimes, but I don't know how to play them. And so it appeals to that part of us. But when you actually look closer at the story, you realize there's a lot more going on. And so one thing that happened was that when he first heard that melody, he thought to himself, oh, for sure, this is some jazz tune that I've heard. You know, my dad used to play a lot of jazz tunes for us. It must be one of those. And so he didn't have some app that he could hum it into to, like, check and make sure that this was an original song. So he had to go around to all of his friends playing this song, like, hey, have you ever heard this before? Did that for roughly a year. And
Which, by the way, is crazy when you think about it, that Paul McCartney walked around for a year playing this song for people. that has become like one of the most iconic songs of all time. And he's just like going around saying, hey, have you ever heard this before? And playing it. Like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And even going to that, hey, have you ever, you know, like think about that. He sat on that song for a year. That's incredible.
Yeah. And Ringo was like, oh, we're sick of it. He keeps playing this song. Like, he thinks he's freaking Mozart or something. They're just annoyed with him over this. But he keeps going around playing this song, trying to figure out whether anybody has ever heard this song before. And, you know, it wasn't until a year and a half later, he was on a holiday to Portugal with his girlfriend, and they were riding from the airport to this old sleepy fishing town on the coast, Albufeira, and suddenly he just had all these lyrics coming to him, and he started sketching them on this, I think it was a brown envelope or something, and then arrived there at Bruce Welch's vacation home, and asked to borrow a guitar, had to flip it over because he's left-handed, and just played this thing and sung the lyrics off of that envelope. And that was the moment when the song really came together. And then they recorded it a couple weeks later. And I enjoy the story so much more now that I understand how it actually happened, because it helps me realize that creativity doesn't happen all at once. And as you said, there's these four stages. And it's funny that these four stages aren't better known. They've been around in creativity science, for 100 years in some form or another. And those four stages are preparation, incubation, illumination, and verification. And preparation is getting that source material into your mind with which you are going to have this great insight. Incubation is this time where you step away from the problem. And there's all sorts of things we can get into that help your mind take care of your creative problems when you aren't actively working on them. And then you have the moment of illumination. So the moment of illumination, that's that moment where either when he was in the backseat of the car and he suddenly found those lyrics, or when he had that dream. That's that moment of illumination, that aha moment. And then there's verification. That's going around asking all your friends, have you heard this song before? And actually, I didn't even mention this in the book, but when you dig deep into that story, obviously the preparation for Paul McCartney, part of it is just, you know, being a Beatle, right? Being a good musician. Right. But also they have found similarities. You know, it's an original song, but they found similarities to a song called Answer Me, which has very similar lyrics, not the same, very similar. And when Paul McCartney was a teenager, that song was number one on the UK pop charts. Hmm. And this was before Spotify, so he had to have heard this song. And it wasn't just number one on UK pop charts once, because it got knocked out of the number one spot. And then it was replaced by another song by a different artist. The same song by a different artist. So the same song was number one twice in the same year.
Wow.
So pretty sure he heard that song. And so it was probably stored somewhere in his subconscious along with all the other music he had heard.
Sure.
And so when you recognize that there are these four stages to creativity, you start to realize, oh, I've been so foolish to sit down and try to learn about a problem and solve it all at once. And once you recognize that, everything gets a lot easier.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of research in this space where, you know, sitting down, engaging, working on a problem, preparing yourself, looking at it from a bunch of different angles, and then breaking away. There's actually a great book called The Breakout Principle that's very similar that describes this process. But basically, you know, break away, go do something mindless, come back, and then often, you know, your mind continues to work, right, behind the scenes on solving this problem when you break away from it. And we don't do that often enough. I think we don't, and this is, you know, when you talk about mind management, like, we don't do this often enough. We don't give ourselves strategic breaks. We don't create, carve out white space in our life. But the white space is where those ideas are likely to happen. Like, how often when you're staring at a problem do you get that brilliant idea? Usually it's when you're on a walk. Usually it's when you're at dinner with someone. Usually it's when you're in the shower, or you're driving, or doing things like that, right? That's when the breakthroughs actually happen. But we don't give ourselves the space for that. Instead, we just try to cram efficiency into our life, you know, sort of cram as much as we can into our life. The problem is, if we don't create that white space, we're not creating the opportunity for those intuitive leaps, for those, you know, big, big moments of progress, those big breakthroughs. Instead, we'll probably just have like little kind of intuitive breakthroughs.
Yeah, and this is something, it's surprising given how much kind of old wisdom there is about this, right? The old, don't sleep on it. We don't do that intentionally, usually. Now, this is something that I've started to incorporate into my work. I think of it as my passive genius, that I'm going to give it a little bit to work with, and I'm going to pass it off. And this sort of little worker inside of my head is going to do these things to help me make progress with it. This is something that I integrate into, say, my podcast. Say I have, do a podcast interview with somebody. And I will, what I used to do is I used to sit down, listen to it, and try to come up with the show notes for it. And you're trying to figure out, well, what is this conversation about? What are the great insights here? And it used to be so painful. It was something that I would really put off. And the last, since then, though, I've taken a technique where I'll kind of load it up onto a podcast player, and I'll like let it play while I'm showering or doing other things. And then I'll play it a little faster, and then I'll play it a little faster. And somehow my brain starts to pick up on the patterns and hear things. And then I even have in my task management system where it's basically what used to take me hours or something is basically just a few 5-minute tasks that are strategically spaced out by a couple days or sometimes a week, where suddenly, yeah, I could just go sit down and, oh, what do you know? This is so much easier to do because I've already done the preparation for it and then allowed the incubation to happen as well. And it becomes this thing where this thing that used to be very difficult, that you used to put off, that took an hour, that you dreaded, now is like 15 minutes of really casual tasks that aren't that hard to do, that you actually enjoy, and the work turns out better.
So I want to talk about capturing ideas, because this is something you mentioned at the end of the book. You talk about your process for capturing creative opportunities. What are some ways that you make sure that those ideas don't slip through the cracks?
Sure. Like you said, the moment that we have the great idea never seems to be that moment when we're sitting down actually working on the problem. And the thing is that we're sort of harnessing randomness here. And again, this is where the time management paradigm becomes incompatible with creative work, is the time management paradigm is built around procedural work. You pick up the brick, you put it on the wall. That's not that hard to do, right? Now, when it comes to the types of connections that we're trying to make when we're trying to solve creative problems, it's like a maze. I think of like procedural work as like a jogging path that you can just run down step by step. Creative work is like a maze where you've got to go down all these different dead ends. It's almost like a scavenger hunt maze where you've got to go down this dead end to find this thing and this dead end to find this thing. And you have to connect those things eventually. And so it's very hard to predict when that's actually going to happen. And Seth Godin made a really interesting observation once, that there's all these water towers on top of the buildings in New York City. Why are there water towers on top of the buildings in New York City? Well, it's because these are tall buildings. It takes a lot of power to pump water up to, you know, every time somebody turns on the shower or starts washing dishes. Instead, what they do is they pump the water up into the water tower. And then when somebody opens up the faucet, then the water comes down. The gravity, the water is up there ready to be used during the moment when you need to use it. And so this is where you can think of it the same way with creative ideas, is they're not fully formed. Sometimes you come up with the perfect solution for a problem you're already working on, but you need to always be capturing. ABC, it's like always be closing, always be capturing. I've got like a little notebook, the Moleskin Volants, the smallest notebook I could possibly find, keep that in my pocket. And you come up with an idea, oh, you just quickly write it down. And then when you have your processing ritual, like if you're a getting things done practitioner, like I am, where you have your weekly review, you go through that and you go through your little inbox where you put down different ideas, and then you just sort of triage those things and put them, oh, this belongs in this project here, or this is sort of a wacky idea, this goes in my R&D department where, you know, this idea is that I may or may not get to someday. It's sort of my someday maybes of ideas. And to just always be capturing and be real and realize that you're not always going to have the idea that you're looking for in the moment that you're looking for it. And this is actually one of the things that also helps with creating that space in between things, is that, yes, subconscious incubation happens where your mind is working on the problem, your mind is forgetting the bad ideas. But then it also, it gives you a little bit of time because you've fed the preparation into your brain. It gives some space for you to maybe have that insight in the shower, where I actually have something called Aqua Notes in the shower. And so if I have an idea in the shower, I can quickly write it down there and get on with my shower. And later on, I can grab that idea and put it in the right place. So when you're doing this work that isn't procedural, that has this sort of random aspect to it, where these insights are coming to you all day, every day, and they're not always related to the problem that you're actually working on, it really helps to capture those and save them for the time when you actually need them.
Well, David, this has been a fascinating conversation. I love the book. It's called Mind Management, Not Time Management. If people want to come find you, what's the best place to find you?
Check out the book. I have a podcast called Love Your Work, and I'm very active on Twitter at @Cadavy, and I have a wonderful weekly newsletter called Love Mondays, and you can find that at cadavy.net.
David Cadavy, it's been great having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Todd, thank you for having me. It's been an honor. I love your work. Thanks for having me on the show.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.